This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
It's time for our Monday serial, a respectable veneer written by Rachel Doré, published by Upstart Press and narrated by Romy Hooper. This serial has been made possible by funding from the Earl Creativity and Development Trust with collaboration from Manawatu People's Radio. A Respectable Veneer is a story about love and courage, but we remind you of our regular content warning. There are elements of violence and references to child abuse. Last time, a date was set for Ruby and Edie to move into Frank's place. But first, in order to keep Douglas and Frank's secret safe, Ruby decided to take matters into her own hands and put an end to Vi's interference.
Hello, Vi. It's Ruby. We met last Sunday, next door, at Frank's. Oh yes, Mrs. Barton. Come in. And Edie, said Ruby, as they stepped inside. I remember. Vi looked past Ruby to the car at the curb. That's a friend I've got waiting for me. I'm sorry, she's being rather nosy. She's happy to wait. We've just come from work.
Work? Said Vi. Well, come down to the kitchen where it's warm.
I shan't stay long. I've brought back your tin.
I wondered where it had gone, said Vi. Frank didn't say.
Frank thought Edie and I would like a few of your cakes. I hope you don't mind. They were beautifully light. Ruby gave Edie a look, hoping she'd say nothing. Edie was gazing at a calendar picture of kittens on the wall.
I'm pleased you liked them.
Vi gave the empty tin a slight shake. I'm sorry I didn't put something in your tin, said Ruby. I haven't had a chance to make anything.
That's all right, dear.
They stood in the middle of the kitchen. A packet of Pall Mall and a box of matches lay next to a large cut glass ashtray on the tablecloth. A place on the small table was set for one. Sentences were drying out in Ruby's throat. It was a relief when a large cat arrived, brushing Edie's legs.
What an enormous cat!
Edie squatted beside the creature.
Careful, Buster's likely to scratch you, said Vi.
Would you like a bicky, Edie?
Yes, please. Thank you, Mrs. Vi.
Vi chuckled.
Sweet child.
Ruby put up her hand. No thanks, Vi, not before she's had her tea.
Quite right, Vi said.
Ruby took a deep breath. Vi, I came to tell you. Frank is going to be renting out a couple of rooms.
Oh, is he?
Vi sucked in her cheeks.
First time I've heard about it.
Edie and I will be moving in. I thought you'd like to know.
Well, I must say, I am surprised. He didn't say anything to me.
Honestly, men are hopeless, aren't they? Ruby said with inspiration. I don't know why it is, Vi, but haven't you found chaps have a way of putting off saying things? My father was the same. They just don't seem to know how to come out with it. There's an example. Why didn't Frank just tell you he gave us your tin? That's what they're like.
Tisk, tisk. That's very true. But
I think it was Mr. Woods who talked him into it. I know he meant well.
Oh, did he?
Vi bridled. It's a lifesaver for Edie and me, a real godsend. I was looking for a place, a flat or something.
I see.
Vi eyed the cigarettes.
Known Mr. Woods long?
A while. He's lovely. We've become very good friends.
It's a wonder I haven't seen you before. Vi arched her brows. Mr. Woods is around next doors often enough. I'd have thought, if he had a young lady, I'd have heard. Mind you, there's always been something of the dark horse about him. But as you say, men don't always let on. He said he and Frank knew one another before the war. Yes, well, I've known Frank all his life. Vi sniffed and tossed her head for emphasis. All his life. Mrs. Pierce and I were in the nursing home together when I had Nigel. My Nigel and Frank grew up great mates, you know. Ruby steered the conversation back. Frank says you've been very good to him. I've done my best since his mother passed away, Vi said. What a terrible, terrible tragedy that was. So many lives lost. Poor Mrs. Pierce. Poor Frank. Edie caught Ruby's signal just as she went to open her mouth. Of course it was her heart. Shock it must have been, trapped like that. Happened just a bit up the line from here. Vi had a storyteller's dramatic gravity. The Whangaehu was flooded from the mountain. And all that rain. A raging torrent it was. It was the middle of the night, and no one knew the bridge had washed out. The express came along and crashed down into the raging river. The engine and half the train with all those people. And dear, dear Mrs. Pierce. Edith was agog. Ruby sized the woman up. The battleground had been drafted. The old bag staked her claim, using the chance to skite about her history with Frank and his late mother. And poor Mrs. Pierce, Vi wasn't stopping. On her way to Hamilton to visit an old bridesmaid friend over Christmas, 'cause the Queen was up there, a big do they were going to have. The light outside had faded to a dull mauve. Vi squinted into Ruby's eyes. I promised her I'd look after Frank while she was away. And since then... Look, I just came to... Ruby shifted her posture. Worse for Frank, though. Him coming back as he did, wounded and poorly. All they had in the world was each other. Then again, we've all had losses and our crosses to bear, haven't we? Yes, said Ruby. You just have to carry on, don't you? That's right, Vi muttered. Carrying on. It's all there is. Ruby took the cue to do what she came for. The thing is, she said, I'm going to be a sort of live-in housekeeper for Frank, doing the washing, housework, and whatever needs doing, and the meals. I'm very much looking forward to cooking for him. It's been a long while since I did any cooking for a man, if you know what I mean. Vi pulled out a kitchen chair and crumpled onto it. I just hope you won't be offended if I seem to be rather taking over. Ruby saw this was a blow. She drove the nail home before her guilt got the better of her. I suppose that's what I'll be doing, in effect. Well... That's decent of you to let me know, at least, said Vi crisply. It'll be just you and young Edie, will it? In with Frank? I was worried you might think it was unconventional. Ruby avoided the question. That's not for me to say, dear. Vi's eyes darkened. And you have a job during the day? Yes. Frank said he's glad of it. I'll be back in plenty of time to do his tea and so on. Apparently he likes to have the whole day to himself to catch up with a nap if he needs to, whenever he feels like it. He said he needs complete privacy and peace and quiet. That did it. The cruelest coup de grace. Vi twisted her apron in her hands. He said that, did he? He made it very clear. Ruby spoke gently. So, you see, with Edie at school and me at work...
Oh, well.
Vi got to her feet.
Working in one of the mills, are you?
No. Ruby ran a hand over the front of her black skirt with deliberation, as though brushing away the idea of millwork. I work at Salon Vado.
Oh!
Vi's tone rose.
That milliner!
Well, it's wonderful to be young, I suppose. Working and a housekeeping position, and looking after a kiddie as well. I hope you're up for it, for Frank's sake. When are you moving in?
Tomorrow, or the next day. It depends.
I see. Well, we're bound to see you over the fence sometime, said Ruby, in a weak attempt to soothe the wound.
Thank you, Mrs.
Your friend will be wondering what I've done with you.
Vi produced a paper bag from a drawer and put an uncounted number of biscuits into it.
Here you go, Edie. Take these with you for later.
Gee, thanks, Mrs. Vi, said Edie. I can take some to school tomorrow.
That's very kind of you, said Ruby. Thank you, Mrs. Wojciechowski, Vi prompted.
Ruby did not want to attempt it again. She had known her announcement would hurt Vi, and now she was saddened and sorry for it. On the path, with Vi's door shut behind them, Ruby gave Edie's shoulder a gentle shove.
By the way, I don't want to hear that expression, gee, from you again, she said.
Why? It's not a swear word.
It's American, and I don't want you to say it.
Everybody says it,
insisted Edie.
At school, anyway. What's wrong with American words?
We're New Zealanders and we speak English.
Ruby opened the car door.
Bag sitting in the front, Edie said.
Home, James, and don't spare the horses, eh?
I've got some biscuits. Do you want one, Auntie Janice?
Ta, lovely. Janice wedged the biscuit in her mouth and started the car. Ruby listened to the sounds of the engine as Janice changed gear. First, second, and the smoother rumble of third. Was tonight's business first or second gear? She ran her hand through the pelt of her cropped hair. It was dangerous to bank on life moving forward. Anything could go wrong.
What's next? Said Janice, changing down to take a corner. Back into third as the road straightened.
When does your houseminding finish? Said Ruby.
Oh, crumbs. I'd almost forgotten about the Edwardses.
Janice glanced across at Ruby.
Oh, I don't want it to end.
Watch it, said Ruby, as Muriel the Vauxhall veered toward a woman on a bicycle.
Next week, said Janice.
And you're leaving in the weekend? Oh, hell.
On Saturday, said Edie.
Don't worry, it's not too bad, and Edie and I can help put everything ship-shape before then. I could even leave them with a tin of biscuits. Janice didn't chatter at morning tea time.
I wish it wasn't Friday, she said, as she put their used tea things on the tray.
Our last night. We'll still see plenty of each other, said Ruby. We might even go out now and then.
Oh, it's been the best time.
I wish... I know. Shall I make something special for tea tonight?
I'll go to the fish shop straight after work.
Janice almost smiled. Then she sniffled into her hanky.
Our last meal together.
Ruby put her arms around her. Don't be silly, she said gently. I'm not emigrating, and I'm sure you can come around to Frank's once we've settled in.
Janice nodded and wiped her eyes.
Cheer up. Ruby gave Janice a peck of a kiss. After work, you take Edie with you. If we leave bang on time, I might catch the butcher before he closes. I'm not sure what Frank's got for tomorrow's tea.
Next morning, Edie forgot Ruby's instructions not to go galumphing around the place, and she gambled to Frank's back door while Douglas took the suitcase out of the car.
"Careful," said Ruby. "I want to get Janice's suitcase back without a scratch."
"Mum!"
Edie appeared at the corner of the house with a pair of scissors in her hand.
"I'm allowed to cut some flowers for my new room. Frank said."
Frank was in his chair on the porch.
"I want a word, but not in front of Tink."
His expression was severe.
"Ruby, I told you. If this is going to work out, I don't want you interfering in things that aren't your concern. But you jumped right in and spoke to Vi."
Douglas, still holding the suitcase, turned from Frank to Ruby.
I, he stammered.
"Are you suggesting I apologize, Frank?"
She glanced toward the passion fruit fence and lowered her voice.
"Frank, having her bustling in, as you call it, whenever she likes, does concern me. It concerns me because I don't want her turning up any more than you do."
Frank smirked.
"My goodness, Douglas, what sort of virago is this you've brought me?"
Douglas opened and shut his mouth, clutching the suitcase, an unsure look on his face.
"After all," Ruby said, "you're not the only one who needs a bit of privacy."
"Touché, I'll give you that."
Frank marked a point in the air.
"Besides," she said, "how else could it be done? From what you said last time I was here, I might have prevented a murder."
There was that laugh again. A chest-ripping, raw laugh, Frank's head thrown back, mouth wide. It was hard to tell whether it was a theatrical guffaw or Frank's peculiar brand of gallows humour. This time she noticed he had a couple of molars missing on one side. The laughter died in a fit of coughing, and Douglas dropped the suitcase to rub Frank's back. Ruby fetched a glass of water.
"All right," said Frank when he'd recovered. "Well then, Ruby, you can make a start by putting the kettle on. Vi certainly didn't waste any time popping over to let me know all about it, but I didn't get any baking this time. She's got the pip good and proper. Before you get too disappointed, though, I rang the grocer to send around a tin of biscuits to celebrate."
"Biscuits! Goody!"
Edie appeared with a few flowers in her fist, some of them weeds.
"I wish I'd thought to get some champagne."
Douglas tapped his forehead.
"Champagne?"
Frank made a funny face.
"Next time, old thing."
"Shouldn't I show Ruby and Edie through first?" Douglas said.
"Plenty of time for that."
Frank got to his feet.
"I'm gasping for a decent cup of tea. Come on, Tink, let's find you a vase."
Over cups of tea and biscuits, Ruby took the notebook and pencil out of her purse. She wanted to start as she meant to go on.
"What's this?" asked Frank. "Am I giving dictation?"
Ruby beamed a smile.
"I want to list your likes and dislikes, as far as food goes. Then I'll list what's expected of me, so we're both clear."
"Good grief," said Frank. "Don't get all efficient on me. Efficient women are far too frightening." "It's a good idea," said Douglas, "for the sake of clarity and economy."
"Why don't we start with food you don't like?" Ruby said.
"Mushrooms."
Frank banged the flat of his hand on the table.
"Tinned mushroom soup is all right occasionally. God knows what they put in it. It doesn't taste of mushrooms anyhow." "And tinned peas. He doesn't like those either," said Douglas. "And no tinned beef." "There you go," said Frank. "Ask him. He knows me inside and out, don't you, Dougie?"
She tapped the page with the pencil. "Anything else?"
"Swede. Can't stand it."
Frank waved his finger.
"And I don't want to see parsnip too often either."
When the page was filled, she was relieved he hadn't counted spinach or silver beet amongst the things he preferred to avoid.
Frank wasn't going to let this be easy. Writing a list of meals he liked would have to wait.
Do you eat puddings?
Edie asked with consternation.
I do, Tink.
Frank brightened.
Love 'em. What sort of pud do you have in mind?
Edie looked at Ruby. No pudding tonight, she said. We'd better settle in first.
Blimey, said Frank. She sounds just like Mother, doesn't she, Dougie? There's a jar of stewed apples in the larder. May we please have some apple crumble tomorrow night, Mummy?
With that, he snorted with laughter. On her way through the large dining room, Ruby paused, looking around and imagining how it must have been while Mrs. Pierce was alive, when it would have been in its proper use. Now, the table and 8 matching chairs had been pushed back to make room for 2 armchairs on each side of the fireplace. Up the passage, past the room they'd been given, and past Frank's room, the front room door was ajar.
Are we allowed to look in the sitting room?
Edie whispered, pulling on her hand. Frank calls it the parlour, and we'll look in there later. There are things to do.
There's always things to do, said Edie,
with a disgruntled tone. Come on, Ruby said. Your uncles want to talk. Let's sort our things out in our room.
Why?
Edie pouted.
We haven't got anything to sort.
Our clothes have to be put away. The room had been waiting for them. Ruby pushed the door closed behind her. No need to lock it. It was their own room. Ruby broke into a smile and spread her arms wide. Lovely, isn't it, chicken? With a few light steps, she took Edie's hands and danced her back and forth across the room. 1, 2, 3, da-dum-dum, until Edie got the giggles and they tumbled onto one of the beds. Putting their things away was no simple matter. Every drawer was full, and the rail in the built-in wardrobe was crammed. I'll talk to Frank, said Ruby. It wasn't the first time their things were hung on the hook behind a door. Still, at least there were coat hangers. She was about to close the wardrobe when she saw the child-sized sleeve of a woolen dressing gown. It must have been Frank's. His mother must have been a sentimental old duck, keeping a thing like that. Look, said Ruby, holding it up. A warm dressing gown.
It's a boy's, and it's horrible, and it'll be itchy.
I'll ask Frank if you can use it. Edie shook her head vehemently. Let's get back to the kitchen, said Ruby. It's time to make our tea.
You've been listening to A Respectable Veneer, a serialized novel by Rachel Doré, read by Romy Hooper. Listen to the next episode at 8 p.m. next Monday, or for the rest of the series, go to npr.nz/show/respectableveneer, or search for A Respectable Veneer wherever you find your podcasts.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.